Picture the scenario. You're scrolling through an online property portal, looking at this stunning whitewashed villa in Lagos, Portugal.
Oh, yeah, we've all been there.
Right. The listing shows, 300 days of sunshine, a sparkling pool, and there's a spreadsheet that promises this clean, highly attractive gross rental yield.
Exactly.
And it's incredibly easy in that moment to view financial data as something that just exists in a sterile vacuum.
Oh, absolutely.
Like you buy the asset, the math says it returns 6%, and you just start picking out patio furniture.
Yeah, I mean the fantasy of coastal real estate almost always relies on that frictionless math.
All right.
The numbers look so safe and predictable when they're just, living behind the glass of your computer screen.
Yeah. But the reality, of course, is that the moment you purchase a physical property, that pristine math is dragged out of the spreadsheet and it's exposed to the
Oh,
elements.
yeah, literally and figuratively.
Literally, yeah. And today, we're heading straight into that reality. Okay, let's unpack this.
Let's do it.
We are dissecting a fascinating 2026 property report from Estate Online, and it's titled How Rental Yields Are Shaping the Lagos Property Investment Case.
It's a great report.
It really is. And our mission for this deep dive is to look past those glossy, perfectly photoshopped real estate brochures of the Western Algarve.
Right.
We're going to use this specific Portuguese market report as a masterclass in critical financial thinking.
Which is so needed right now.
So needed. The goal is to tear down the illusion of the gross yield and uncover the hidden, often pretty brutal realities of net returns.
Yeah.
Because the financial friction we're going to explore today, it applies whether you're eyeing a beachfront condo in Europe or, a duplex in your own hometown.
Yeah, I mean, Lagos in 2026 serves as just the perfect laboratory for this kind of financial stress test.
It really does.
Because for years, this was a market entirely dominated by conversations about, lifestyle and rapidly appreciating asking prices.
Just buy it because it's pretty.
Exactly. But as the Estate Online report makes very clear, coastal property in the Algarve now trades at such a steep premium that the lifestyle justification, it just isn't enough for most investors anymore.
No, the math has to work.
Right, the fundamental math actually has to hold the entire project together.
The income generated by the home has really become the ultimate test of the asset's viability.
Yeah.
So let's start with the hook. The surface level numbers that are currently drawing all these international buyers to the Algarve
Yeah.
before we start dismantling them.
Sure, lay it out.
So broadly speaking, the report shows that gross rental yields on Lagos apartments are currently sitting between 5 and 6%.
Right, which sounds great. And breaking that down by property size, it reveals a very clear
Oh,
hierarchy.
yeah.
Like the smaller units are doing the heavy lifting for the overall market average.
Right, the studios.
Yeah. Studios are returning the highest gross yield, peaking at around 6.1%.
Okay.
But then you move up to a one-bedroom flat, and that yield drops to about 5.5%.
Right.
And by the time you scale up to a two-bedroom apartment, you're looking at a return closer to 5.0% on current pricing.
Right. And the inverse relationship between size and yield there, it makes perfect logical sense when you look at the mechanics of holiday rentals.
It really does.
Because a studio has a significantly lower barrier to entry in terms of purchase price, but you can still charge a premium nightly rate.
Right, because you're not really renting out square footage.
Exactly. You are renting out the location, the access to the marina, the proximity to the beach.
Yeah.
A solo traveler or a couple, they'll pay a premium just for that access.
Oh, absolutely.
But once you scale up to a two-bedroom unit, the initial capital required to buy the property climbs much faster than the incremental nightly premium a family of four is willing to pay.
Right.
The sheer size of the purchase price dilutes the overall yield.
Yeah, and Lagos also occupies a highly specific geographical and financial middle ground compared to the rest of the Algarve, which directly impacts these yield percentages.
Okay, what do you mean?
Well, it sits comfortably between two extremes.
Oh, right. I actually look at it as a Goldilocks market.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like a blue chip stock with a trendy brand attached to it.
Oh, that's a good way to put it.
Right. It has the glitz of a premium lifestyle asset, but it still manages to kick back a functional dividend.
Yeah, let's compare it to those extremes to see why that 5 to 6% is unique.
Okay.
So if you look further east along the coast toward the ultra premium resort pockets, the yields compress heavily.
Like how highly?
They often drop down into the low 4% range.
Wow.
Yeah. And the reason for that compression is just the massive buy-in costs.
Right.
When a property commands a multi-million euro price tag for, you know, exclusive resort amenities, the rental income simply cannot scale proportionately. The
denominator is just too large.
Exactly. But then on the other end of the spectrum, you have more workaday administrative markets like Faro. The housing stock there is cheaper to acquire, which mathematically lifts the gross yields past 6%, but it lacks the premium tourism draw. So Lagos threads the needle. The entry price is high enough to keep the yield percentage honest, but the demand fundamentals are so strong that occupancy remains incredibly high.
Right. And those fundamentals are a major focus of the report. You have the historic center, you've got the modern marina, an extensive run of beaches.
Yeah, the beaches are incredible.
And a remarkably deep pool of international tenants that keeps properties full well into the shoulder seasons.
Which is huge.
Right. So it's 6.1% gross yield on a studio in that environment. It looks fantastic on paper.
On paper, yeah.
On paper. But for anyone who has ever built a real estate model, a gross yield is just an introduction.
Yes, it is.
We need to talk about the drop to the net yield.
Right.
Because the report notes that once you factor in the real-world operating expenses, the net yield on those exact same Lagos properties falls to somewhere between 3.6 and 4.4%.
And that gap, that roughly 1.5% between the gross and the net, is arguably the most critical metric in the entire report.
Really?
Yeah, because it is the dividing line between an asset that comfortably funds its own existence and a liability that constantly requires capital injections from the owner just to stay afloat.
Wow. I mean, a drop from 6% to 4.5% isn't shocking in itself, right?
Yeah.
Like anyone who has ever owned an investment property knows to model for standard operational expenses.
Well, Zaysicker.
You factor in vacancy, property management fees, general upkeep. But what stands out in this data is what exactly is eating that margin in Lagos.
Right.
It's not just a leaky roof or, you know, an unexpected plumbing bill. The friction here seems uniquely aggressive.
What's fascinating here is how universally buyers underestimate the compounding physical toll the coastal environment takes on a home.
Oh, the environment.
Yeah, you are not dealing with standard inland wear and tear. You are in a constant losing battle against salt air.
The salt air, right.
That atmospheric salt penetrates HVAC condenser coils. It rapidly degrades window seals. It corrodes exterior hinges. And it dramatically shortens the lifespan of exterior paint.
Oh, wow. So you're constantly repainting.
Constantly. The report emphasizes that the running costs of ownership in the Western Algarve sit meaningfully above where they were 5 years ago because the replacement cycle for materials is just so much faster.
Right. And plus, in the high-end short-term rental market, swimming pools are virtually mandatory.
Oh, yeah. We have to have a pool.
So you have the chemical balancing, the pump maintenance, and then just the sheer volume of human traffic.
Exactly.
Like high turnover holiday guests drag sand into the mechanisms of sliding doors. They run the air conditioning with the windows wide open.
All the time.
And they treat the property with the carelessness of a hotel room.
Right.
But physical decay is only part of the financial friction.
Right.
The report highlights massive structural costs that hit your ledger before you even change a light bulb.
Yes. We have to factor in the local property tax known as IMI.
IMI, okay.
That takes an annual bite of between 0.3 and 0.45% of the property's rateable value.
Okay, so that's ongoing.
Right. However, the most jarring financial hurdle is the upfront acquisition cost.
Oh boy.
The all-in cost to simply acquire a home in Portugal, accounting for the property transfer tax and stamp duty, will immediately swallow between 8 and 10% of your purchase price.
Wait, 8 to 10%?
Day one.
That is a staggering crater to start in.
I mean, let me think. I get that a pool needs cleaning, but a 1.5% drop just for maintenance and some local taxes, it feels like we're buying a luxury car and forgetting we have to pay for premium gas and imported parts.
That is exactly what it's like.
If you purchase a €500,000 apartment, you are sinking up to 50,000 euros into taxes and fees on day one.
Yes.
If your net yield is grinding along at 3.6%, it will take you nearly 3 years of perfectly optimized rental income just to break even on the privilege of getting the keys.
That is the reality.
The gross yield completely ignores that massive capital friction. It does. Which brings us to the next layer of complexity.
There's more.
Oh, yeah. Physical maintenance and acquisition taxes are hurdles you can model for and to some extent manage. But the mid-2025 legislative changes introduce friction that is entirely out of the investor's control.
Right, right. Because physical decay is brutal, but at least you can hire a better property manager or, you know, upgrade to corrosion-resistant materials.
Exactly.
You have agency. But when we transition into the bureaucratic friction detailed in the report, that agency just vanishes.
Completely.
The regulatory landscape acts like a series of hidden toll booths that siphon cash before the rent ever hits the owner's bank account.
Yeah, the regulatory landscape shifted seismically with Decree Law 35-2025, which went into full effect on July 1st, 2025.
Okay.
Any financial projection built on the pre-2025 tax assumptions is essentially worthless today.
Wow.
The new law completely rewrote the rules for non-resident investors.
So Decree Law 35 essentially killed the VAT loophole for small-time landlords.
It did.
Because previously, an overseas investor letting a single apartment could slide under the VAT registration threshold.
Right, which meant less paperwork and slightly better margins.
Yeah, but under the new decree, a non-resident hosting short-term rentals must register for VAT from the very first euro generated. There is no grace period.
None. The compliance net catches everyone now, and the taxation structure itself is deeply layered.
Okay, tell me about these layers.
Let's look at the mechanics of those toll booths you mentioned. First, the accommodation service is taxed at a reduced rate of 6%.
Okay, 6%.
Next, your non-resident rental income is subjected to a flat 25% tax rate.
Ouch.
And finally, you have to navigate the simplified Category B regime, which applies a 35% coefficient to your turnover.
Oh, wait. Here's where it gets really interesting.
Yeah.
Because that 35% coefficient is a brilliantly blunt instrument by the tax authority.
It really is.
And it explains exactly how a spreadsheet's projections can get wiped out overnight.
How so?
Well, under Category B, the government doesn't sit down and review your actual receipts for a broken air conditioner or a pool repair.
Right.
Right.
Instead, they simply mandate that 65% of your gross income is assumed to be your operating expense.
Right. They just assume it.
And they tax the remaining 35% as your profit margin.
Yes.
So if you have an awful year, right, and your real expenses shoot up to 80% of your revenue, you still get taxed as if you made a 35% profit.
Yeah.
You cannot deduct the reality of your situation.
Exactly. That bluntness forces the owner to absorb all the volatility.
Wow.
And the administrative burden to handle these filings sits entirely on the owner's shoulders.
Of course it does.
It's all managed through the state's Portal das Finanzas.
So the brochure shows me a beach, but leaves out the Portal das Finanzas.
Oh, they definitely leave that out. Furthermore, before a single guest can book a night, the property must secure an Alojamiento local license,
right,
which is a mandatory national tourism registration.
The ultimate gatekeeper.
Yeah.
Because if you don't have the Alojamiento local license, you don't have an income-producing asset. You just have an empty apartment rusting in the salt air.
Basically, yeah.
And this completely changes the calculus for the casual investor. The brochure sells you a relaxed lifestyle, but the reality is you are spending your evenings navigating Portuguese tax portals and compliance filings.
And the wider incentive landscape has also tightened.
Oh, right. The visas.
Yeah. For years, the non-habitual resident scheme, or NHR, provided incredibly favorable tax treatment for foreign buyers.
It was huge.
It was a massive catalyst for earlier waves of investment. But the NHR was closed to new entrants in 2024.
So it's gone for new buyers.
Right. A buyer in 2026 cannot factor those old tax shields into their strategy. Buyers who actually intend to relocate to Portugal now utilize pathways like the D7 passive income visa or the D8 digital nomad visa.
But moving into the property fundamentally breaks the investment model we've been discussing, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
Like, if you are living in your Lagos apartment on a D8 nomad visa, you aren't generating a 6.1% gross yield from tourists.
No, you're living in it.
Right. Right. You are consuming the asset's utility as a primary residence. Your personal math is totally different.
Exactly.
Which leads me to a major question.
Okay.
If the barrier to entry costs 10% in taxes, the bureaucracy is suffocating, you can't deduct unexpected expenses under Category B, and your net yield is squeezed down to maybe 3.6%.
Yeah.
Why is capital still flowing into the Western Algarve in 2026?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, we find the core mechanism that keeps the Lagos market buoyant despite all this friction.
Okay.
The saving grace is capital growth, underpinned by severe supply constraints and a highly specific buyer profile.
Ah, capital growth.
Right. In this market, a net yield in the high 3% range is not intended to be a primary cash flow engine.
Okay.
The property functions as a wealth preservation vehicle.
Right. The valuation data in the Estate Online report provides the context for that wealth preservation. The median coastal pricing in Lagos in 2026 sits at roughly 4,500 euros per square meter.
Yeah.
And depending on your proximity to the marina or the water, that spread ranges from 4,300 up to 5,700 euros per square meter.
Which is high.
Very high. And to understand how disconnected that is from the rest of the country, we can look at the Idealista benchmark cited in the source materials.
Right.
The national median price in Portugal earlier in the year was just 2,076 euros per square meter. Lagos is trading at more than double the national average.
Yeah, that massive premium is protected by structural realities. You simply cannot build more coastline.
Right.
And local planning laws heavily restrict new high-density developments.
Mm-hmm.
But the true floor of the Lagos market is set by the psychology and financial profile of the dominant buyer demographic.
Oh, the report calls them the equity-rich buyers.
Yes.
These aren't highly leveraged investors sweating over a basis point hike in central bank interest rates.
Precisely the opposite. Heavily capitalized buyers set the baseline pricing in Lagos.
Okay.
Because they are not carrying massive mortgages, they are immune to the pressure that forces typical landlords to sell during economic downturns.
So they just wait it out.
Exactly. Right. If interest rates spike or if the global economy suffers a recession, these owners simply hold.
Right.
A market dominated by equity-rich owners rarely experiences panic selling or fire sales, which are the traditional mechanisms that drag down comparable property values in a correction.
Because they don't need the liquidity. So the market never floods with distressed inventory.
That's it.
This dynamic dictates the varying investment strategies we see playing out. Like the report notes that purchasing a studio apartment in the historic center solves a very different financial problem than buying a sprawling family villa up in the hills above the beach.
Right. Totally different. A studio in the historic center is optimized for yield.
Okay.
It caters to short stay couples and a younger demographic, driving higher turnover and maximizing that 6.1% gross return.
That makes sense.
But a family villa, however, is a classic capital preservation play.
Okay.
It might be rented out for a few peak weeks in August to cover its annual IMI and maintenance costs.
Just to break even on holding it?
Exactly. But its primary function is to serve as a generational asset that reliably appreciates over decades.
So what does this all mean? If we synthesize this report into a practical framework for the listener, the ultimate takeaway is a complete recalibration of how you view real estate marketing.
Yes, absolutely.
You have to treat the gross yield as nothing more than a conversation starter. It is a theoretical number that assumes perfect conditions.
Yeah.
The net yield, the number that remains after you account for the friction of reality, must dictate your final decision.
Yeah, whether you are evaluating a coastal apartment in the Algarve or modeling a multiplex in the Midwest, you must meticulously build the frictional costs into your projections.
You have to.
You have to run the tax implications at the current non-exempt rates. You must build in realistic vacancy buffers for the shoulder months. And you must be brutally honest about the accelerated physical decay that a specific environment will inflict on the asset.
Right. You model the red tape, the tax coefficients, and the corrosive sulfur before you commit the capital.
Yes.
The surviving number is your actual return.
Yeah. This raises an important question, though, one that builds directly on the mechanics we've just unpacked.
Oh, what's that?
Well, we are observing a local housing market in Lagos that is almost entirely propped up by equity-rich absentee buyers.
Right.
These are global investors who have the immense capital required to absorb a 10% acquisition tax, fund heavy coastal maintenance, and casually accept a 4% net yield just to park their wealth.
Yeah, the math works perfectly for the preservation of international wealth.
It does. But what happens to the cultural fabric of the town itself over a 20-year horizon?
Oh, well.
If the pricing floor is set so high that only wealthy global investors can afford to buy into the historic center, does the charm, the local community, and the authenticity that originally put Lagos on the map eventually hollow out?
That is the big question.
It is. We have to wonder if, in the pursuit of wealth preservation, the market inadvertently transforms a vibrant Portuguese coastal town into a beautifully maintained but ultimately hollow museum for temporary guests.